meeting. My name is Ellen, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our own personal story describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aablueschipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight's speaker, I don't really know a lot about, but what I can tell you is her smile totally lights up a room, and her spirit lights up a room when she walks in the door. When I very first saw her, was in a ladies' meeting, and I shared about some things going on with me, and she immediately came up afterwards and just kind of made me feel very loved, very welcomed, and with that, I give you Cappy.
Hello, everybody. My name is Cappy, and I am a grateful recovering alcoholic. I can't tell if I'm having a heat flash right now or if I'm nervous and sweating. So, thank you, my dear. I need all the help I can get. I learned something being in AA. You accept help. And that's what I do now. I'm very good at it. I have a little cheat sheet. This is also my first time telling my story, so I am a little bit nervous, so y'all bear with me. My sober date is January 5th, 2019. That was an amazing day for me. I was born December 11th, 1962. That means I have a birthday coming up. And I am going to be 6-0. However, they say that's the new 40, so bring it on. All right, I have a sister. She's 13 months older than me, and we have never gotten along. My mom and my dad, they divorced when I was little, about 5 years old. So we moved in with my mom's parents. We call them Mama Dear and Papa Dear. And all throughout high school, we lived with Mama Dear and Papa Dear. So it was like I had my mother and another mother and a wonderful grandfather. We lived with them all throughout high school. Next door to us lived my aunt and my uncle, who's now deceased, and they're four girls. And my Uncle Richard is over there. Raise your hand. He's a pivotal point in my sobriety. I've loved him since I was a little girl. And I still do, even more, now that I'm sober. With my with the families being like the Waltons, it was really kind of a lot of tension, a lot of drama, just some fussing, and always trauma and stuff. Something always was going on with us. I went to Riverwood High School. I was graduated in 81. And that was a fun school. We called it Reefer Weed. I'm so old that it started in 8th grade and went to 12th grade. It was a lot of fun. I wasn't there long because I got in a program where I could leave school early before lunch. And in the middle of 8th grade, I started modeling. And it just took off, and I modeled every day. And so finally, my senior year, the principal called me into his office. I didn't do anything wrong. And he said, if you miss one more day, we're not going to graduate you. So I cried all the way to my agent's office, and she said, what's wrong with you? I said, well, they're not going to graduate me if I miss another day of school, so how am I going to do my job? And she said, don't worry, we'll take care of that. You just go to school. Anyway, I modeled all through high school, and when I got out of high school, my first drunk, I was at a party, a keg party. We had lots of keg parties. I drank way too much. And I went home, and Mama Dear stayed up all night with me. She said I wandered all around the house, and I didn't know what was going on. I don't even remember getting home. She asked me the next day, she said, what was wrong with you? I said, oh, I don't know. I must have had a little too much wine. And she was so sweet. And anyway, my first drink was about when I was 4 years old. My great-grandmother thought we should have a little bit of sherry before we take naps, especially when we were down on vacation. She always went with us. She'd give us a little sherry, about that much. And boy, howdy, if y'all never had that, it is warm and thick, and I liked what it did to me. It was really good. And I like to nap. So I really started liking alcohol rather early. Then I moved to New York City and went up there to model. I got a job as a hostess in this restaurant. Met my husband. He was the host, and he was the manager of the restaurant. We got married, and we were married for 9 years. He was a drinker. We both drank. We drank a lot. We moved to L.A., and that's where I got a job at this place called Tattoo. It was a super place to go out to eat. It was called a Tattoo. It was a supper club. And on one side, they had the restaurant, and on the other side, they had the club part. And I went there to get a job as a hostess. Well, I go in to get the job, and I'm upstairs with the owner, and I don't know if y'all have heard of him, but his name is Mark Fleshman. He just did assisted suicide, and it was all in the papers, and he hired me. That was my boss, and I got to know him kind of well, and his wife, Mimi. They didn't hire me. He and Rudolph hired me, and they hired me for the club door, not a hostess position. And that was really pretty cool. I was called the, excuse me for saying it, bitch with clipboard that let everybody in, whatever. And so one day they moved me to the club, to the restaurant door, and I thought it was they were demoting me, not promoting me. And I went up to them and talked to them and said, you know, okay, I don't understand. What did I do wrong? They said, you didn't do a darn thing wrong. We trust you not to take money. It's a non-pay door. And so I had established some sort of trustworthiness, so that was pretty cool. The next thing they said is, they said, you're welcome to have cocktails. You can go to the bar. Why would anybody give me permission to drink? Anyway, so I could drink, but they just said, don't get drunk. Well, I had the valet drive me home several nights. And then there were other nights that I didn't get drunk. But I didn't have a whole lot of consequences or trouble in L.A. But that's where I met Marcus. I wasn't a very faithful wife. I was still married, and I met at the club door this guy named Marcus. And he looked exactly like what I fell in love with when I was a little girl, when I watched old movies with my grandfather, the Western ones. I liked those. Those Indians with the long black hair, and he was just gorgeous. And we got together in my last year in L.A. We spent like the whole year together, but I was still married, still living with my husband. He didn't know a thing. He just thought he was my friend. Anyway, I went to see him in the Philippines, and he threw away my birth control pills. I told my husband I was going to see him. This is after we had already moved back to New York. I flew over to the Philippines drinking everything I could drink on the plane, and we had a stop in Osaka, and I was at it seemed like about like this podium, a round table, and people from these guys, all these guys drinking, and me drinking with all these guys who were foreign, and I kind of arrived drunk, of course. That was my new thing, just get drunk all the time. I got pregnant over there, and they told me I wasn't pregnant, and I cried. And so my Mark is the father of my child. He said, she is pregnant. They made me drink a quart of water, 3 quarts of water, and did an ultrasound, and definitely I was pregnant. When I went back to New York, I said, I'm moving back to Atlanta, told my husband, and I moved back to Atlanta and had my baby. I was back at home, back in the Walton situation. When I had my baby, she didn't latch on real well. I couldn't breastfeed, and that's one thing that I really desired, to be able to breastfeed. So my doctor and the nurse, they suggested I have a glass of wine to relax. There's that permission again. Didn't they know that I drank too much? No, I don't even think I knew. I just thought, you know, you're supposed to drink all the time. And definitely with permission, wasn't that great. However, I didn't drink. When I got pregnant with her, I didn't drink. I had 2 sips of wine and pushed it away and didn't drink throughout my whole pregnancy. And her daddy said, why aren't you drinking? I said, because I have a baby inside of me. And I don't want to drink. I don't know what came over me, but I did not drink my whole pregnancy. But when they gave me permission to have that wine, I was off to the races. So I'm back in the house with Mom and Mama Deer and Papa Deer. And they are there, and they are my helpers. So I can date and go to work and do whatever I want to do. And they, you know, it was great. They had a baby. We had a baby. And I found myself drinking a lot. With my drinking came consequences. And one day they sat me down, and Papa Deer, my grandfather, he said, they all said, they said, we want you to go somewhere just for a few days. And so I went to Ridgeview. And that was my first place to go to a rehab. And I don't know if it was like a detox, because it wasn't very long. So it must have been a detox situation, but I wasn't drunk when I went in there, so I kind of don't understand. And I remember this lady, I call her Nurse Ratchet, but she, for some reason, they let me get my credit card. I had money, and I had a credit card, and they let me order pizza and Coca-Cola, and I was real happy because everybody was happy. They thought, oh, this girl's fun. And we're all sitting in there, and I go to give her back my credit card so she can put it back up in my stuff, and she says, well, you're really having a good time. Where do you think you are? I said, I believe I'm at Ridgeview. And she says, well, you're having fun. And so that really made me think that rehab wasn't supposed to be fun. And I didn't understand, because I wasn't really doing anything wrong and I wasn't drinking. So I didn't really like rehabs. But that didn't matter. I went to several more. I found myself drinking a lot. A lot. And I really liked red wine, and so did my best girlfriend, who's sitting right over there. And we liked Ben 389, and we just drank that wine like crazy. I had 2 huge outside garbage bags full of the corks. I was going to do something with those corks, make cork boards or, you know, those things where you pin stuff. But for some reason, I just never got around to it. Got too drunk or, you know, it wasn't top priority. But I had the 2 bags sitting up there until my mother threw them away. Anyway, they finally moved me. My granddaddy had a lot of real estate in Atlanta, and they were so sweet to me, my grandparents. They set me up in a house, a beautiful house, had it all fixed up for me, and it was really nice. But I was drinking. I was drinking, and, you know, I'd already been to that rehab and another rehab, and I just was getting in trouble all the time with my drinking. But that didn't stop me, you know. I didn't think they were noticing. Anyway, terrible things happened. Our house burned down, and I got really burned bad. I was in the Grady Burn unit. That was very scary. I had third-degree burns. My hair was real long. It burned up to here, so I had to cut all my hair off. And my face, they wouldn't let me look at myself for a few days. and some of the cosmetic people say today, well, you had a nice burn peel. I don't think that was really funny. They took that house away from me. They moved me out. I now live in the house right next door. And it's a real nice reminder because I can look right out my bathroom window and see the house that I lost. But I love Josie, who lives there now with her son and her husband. You know, she lets me come over, and she knows about me because I've told her, because she's my neighbor and I love her. You know, it's not so bad, but at first it really, you know, for a while I was drinking. It was hard to stop drinking because every time I saw that house and thought about it, I'd cry and say I'd really messed up. There is nothing left for me. You know, I'll never have a house again. Well, anyway, so my daughter got taken away from me. And that was a biggie. I had to go to juvenile court. Y'all see the consequences building up around me and my drinking. My daughter taken away from me. Just the custody, of course, but it was brutal. And I went to a pre-hearing, and he wanted me to get into some sort of rehab, and then he rescheduled it for another hearing. So me and my uncle, who's sitting over there, we went out to Anchor Hospital and looked up, talked to them, and got me registered to do an IOP, intensive outpatient. You know what? I was a sneaky little sly thing then, too. I went in with that, all that, and handed it to the judge. He accepted it. And so I thought, this isn't bad, because I didn't want to go back to a rehab. I'd been to those mean places, and I didn't want to be locked up for a long time, and I knew I'd have a little freedom, you know, but I knew I had to do, you know, the P-test and all that, so I had to be good. But I was ready to quit drinking. I wanted my daughter back, and I wanted everybody off my back. So, let's see. It was Ridgeview, Anchor Hospital, Gateway in Brunswick. Now, that place was a trip. It was government funded, and that was because we always went down to Sea Island for the whole month of July. And my grandmother had then bought a place over on St. Simon's. So we were down there, and I was doing my own thing, drinking. And then they took me so quick. They said, you're going to rehab. And I had gotten my daughter back, so I was really scared they were going to take her away again. And so here I go. I didn't like rehab, and I didn't know how to quit drinking. So I just kept drinking. I went to the DeKalb Crisis Center and Black Bear and Helen, Georgia. That was a trip because I could order my own food. I could tell the chef what to make me. And when I think back about it now, that just made me a bigger brat and spoiled. And I went to the DAC for intensive outpatient again. Well, I met this lady through my grandmother. They were in the same Sunday school class. We had always gone to church, and I knew I had a higher power. I just, you know, didn't have time for him. I was too busy drinking. I had met this lady, and I started taking her to the hair salon. And I took her, and the guy who owned the hair salon was about 83. He was really nice, and he needed someone to take care of his dog while he went to Greece for 3 weeks. And so I said, well, let me come and see where you live and meet the dog. Well, I love the dog. And I stayed and took care of the dog and his house. And I was actually back at Ridgeview going to intensive outpatient, again, to intensive outpatient at this time. And I was on a schedule, and I was doing really good. And I had gotten a sponsor here. And I've already established myself here and knew all the people that sit at that table back there at the 7:30 a.m. meeting. He was real nice, and we talked while he was in Greece, and when he got back, I said, I really like it here. I don't want to leave. And I wasn't drinking, but he drank. Slowly but surely, I started drinking again with him. And it was, you know, I figured, oh, he's an older man. I could handle this. Well, we all know how that went. No, I couldn't handle it at all. And got drunk, and he would hit me with his cane and try to twist my foot off of my whole leg. I mean, he hurt me. And at one point, my mother took me down to Grady, and we got pictures taken. But, of course, I thought he was such a sweet old man, and I knew it was my fault that he was hitting me and hurting me and split my head open. And I was sharing about it one day here. After the meeting, my sponsor now came up to me and she said, he's an asshole. She said, you did not deserve to be beat up. Do you realize that? And I still didn't realize it, but I just looked at her and kind of believed her. Because she's sweet and she's my sponsor. And her name is Laura and I love her so much. And she told me, she said, you don't have to live like this. I asked her to be my sponsor. Wow. His daughter kicked me out of the house. His daughter probably saved my life. I believe he might have killed me. That's what my uncle thinks. That's what I kind of think now, too. And so I was back with my mother and my grandmother, because my granddaddy had passed on. 2 weeks before she had kicked me out, Lee had gone, the old man that I was living with, had gone into the hospital. So I had about 2 weeks to drink to my glory. I was in that house all alone, just me and that poor doggy. I used Shannon. She was the girl that was the caretaker for my grandmother. She'd come in and help us with her. And we got to be good friends. And she'd come over and I asked her to go get me liquor and wine. And she did. And I had a nice supply. And I drank. I drank for 2 weeks straight. And I got really sick. And you know how it is when you drink, you can't eat. So I was kind of a real mess. Got to be where I was just in bed, leaning over the side just to kind of throw up. And I couldn't get up out of the bed to go to the bathroom, so I'd have to crawl to the bathroom. I didn't know what was happening, really. I knew things didn't seem right, so she kicked me out. And the guy who took me, Tim, he took me home. I could barely walk. He walked me up to my mom's house. And the next thing I know, I wake up the next morning. I said, Mom, take me to the hospital. And so she took me to Piedmont Hospital. Those doctors, three of them, came in and they said, Cappy, if your mother hadn't have brought you in an hour later, you would have died. Everything was shutting down in my system. I don't know how it is, but I kind of left there unscathed, and everything was enlarged, and but nothing too serious. Well, a couple of weeks went by, and my mother went out to one of her meetings, so I had some free time, and I couldn't walk because I was still too weak, but I could get a cab. I had some money. So this is my last time to go to the liquor store. I bought a couple of 5 mini bottles and 2. I was a bourbon drinker. I bought 2 bottles of gin thinking that I'd get a high and wouldn't get drunk or whatever. I didn't know nothing. Anyway, my mom came home and found me passed out in her bathroom. The next thing that happened was the best thing that happened in my life. My sister had an intervention on me, my last intervention, and I was headed to Bridges of Hope. She had told me about it. I wanted nothing to do with Bridges of Hope. But actually, that night, I was what they call, and I was a slogan hater. I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. And I willingly went. And guess what? I did the first step right at my refrigerator. I opened it. My sister kept walking around. I said, "Would you leave me alone?" She said, "If you run out of this house, we're not going to let you back in." I said, "I'm not going anywhere. I want to go to rehab." And I opened that refrigerator door, this big bottle of white wine. I hate white wine. I wouldn't have touched it for anything. I looked at that white wine and I said, "God, that's my higher power." And I said, "I don't want that white wine. I don't want nothing to drink." I said, "I need your help. I want to quit drinking." So I did the first step right there. I surrendered to my higher power, whom I choose to call God. And I went to Bridges of Hope. You know why those other rehabs didn't work? I wasn't ready. I didn't want them. I walked into Bridges of Hope wanting rehab. And it was fun. It was kind of different. It was a work program. They had me start off in the bathrooms. I had to clean up the bathrooms. Very humbling. And you didn't spend long there. Then they'd move you on, you know, some of the people, because it was everybody in Bridges of Hope is in recovery. And so some went to the restaurant, and they sent me to the garden. I loved the garden. The garden was so cool. I liked Bridges of Hope. The first lady that I met was Jenny. She met me at 2:30 in the morning. She was my 48. And she said, "You don't have to get up. You can sleep in the morning." And I said, "Oh, but I want to participate." And I did. And I remember just going in this big room and all the girls sitting around. And we're all sharing about, I think it's just about ourselves or something. And I don't remember what the topic was. But this girl said something about Jehovah God. And that was her higher power. I looked up and I looked back. And so I had known about the Jehovah's Witnesses because my mom's a Jehovah's Witness. I'm Baptist, but she's a Jehovah's Witness. And so, and I had been going to some meetings with my mother. So when I shared, I said, "Yeah, Jehovah is wonderful. I do love him." And I saw her come up, and then we both. And so I got to talking to her afterwards, and she said, "I have a Bible study every Wednesday, and it's right before supper on Wednesdays. Would you like to come?" I said, "Oh, yeah, how can I come?" And she said, "All you got to do is go in the office and tell them." Well, she got kicked out 5 days later. And here I'm stuck in the Bible study. I'm grateful. I wanted to stay. I loved it. You know what? That was like one of my first miracles from surrendering, because I think that God put those Jehovah's Witnesses there to make me comfortable. And they did. And I went every Wednesday, and they made me happy. And every time I'd come in to supper, and I could come in late, too, and I didn't get the consequence. I love that. And I'd say, the girls would say, "You're so happy every time you come back." I said, "Well, we've just been talking about God." But the funny thing about it is, I love my big book. I took my big book, and when we'd be reading the stories in the Bible, I'd always bring up something from the big book, you know, because I didn't want them to get me too far away so into the religion. I wanted to stay with my big book, you know, because I was really getting into it. And you know, all the girls would go and smoke their cigarettes, and I wasn't quite smoking yet. So I was reading the big book and all the stories, and that was making me feel real comfortable and at home. It was just, it was nice. And my uncle came down every Sunday for visitation and brought me great food. And I got passes when I could go and come home. And that was like, I think, after 3 months of being there, and I came right to Napa. And of course, I'd have to get my little notes signed because to show that I attended meetings. I remember they told me in that, in Bridges of Hope, they said, don't say you got it. And I was like, what do you mean? I'm kind of getting the program. And so I came and asked my friend Thomas, that sits right at the early morning study group every day still. I love Thomas. And he said, I said, they tell me, Thomas, not to say I've got it. And I kind of feel like I've got it. And I kind of, when I graduate, I can't wait to be back here and get more. And he said, I tell you what, Kathy, you do have it. You take that back, and you tell him you've got it. And so I did. And I stayed there. I did leave early because they threw away, they only had, you could keep the food in a, they had a cooler on the floor, and it got real messy, so they threw my food away once, and I retrieved it out of the trash can because it was all in Ziploc bags and dated and everything. And she said, I said, why in the world would you throw away my food? And she said, because you didn't have it dated properly. I said, how could this not be dated properly? It's dated. It's got dates on it. So she let me keep my food. Well, then the second time that Uncle Richard brought me food, they threw that away. And so I told Uncle Richard on that Sunday, they just threw my food away again. He said, are you ready to leave? I said, I really am. I think so. But I really was ready to go. I was a little scared, but I thought I was really ready to go. And I went, he said, what do you have to do? I said, I have to go in the office and tell him. And I went in and told them, and they made him wait. They made him go away and come back to get me, and I got all packed up. And I came back, and came back to Nava. And I haven't missed a meeting since I left that rehab. My dear friend Paul is smiling at me, and oh, I've got all of y'all, just Keith here. We had a long conversation on the phone last night. I tell you one thing I've learned. You get lots of numbers. And you get to know the people. There's so much love in these rooms. Y'all want to know why I couldn't quit drinking? It's right here on page 30 of the big book. The idea that someday, somehow, Cappy will control Cappy's drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity and death. I don't know what happened, but I sure am glad that I had that intervention, that last intervention. I'm grateful that I became willing to work on myself, willing to see that I do have character defects, that I wasn't as sweet as I thought I was, that I was a darn mess, and that I needed help. So I did the step one right there at the refrigerator. Step two came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. He was doing that. He restored me to sanity just by letting me walk into Bridges of Hope. I felt like I was at home. I felt comfortable. I didn't have any monkeys on my back anymore. I was in a rehab, and I wanted to be there. It was awesome. Step three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God. I understand him. You know, I got baptized when I was around 11. I thought I knew everything. I felt was wonderful that day. But I got busy with life. Life gets lifey. We all know that. And I didn't have time for God. And I put him aside. But there's something I know about my loving God. He didn't let me die when I flipped my car 6 times. I wasn't drunk that time, but I was hungover. He didn't let me die. He didn't let me die and get burned in that fire. As bad as I got burned in the fire, I didn't die. And I can remember being in the Grady Burn unit. That's an awesome place to be if you get burned, by the way. The food's delicious. They won't even let you bring flowers in there because of the bacteria and all of that. But anyway, there was a little girl. Her whole face was burned. And I remember looking at her. And I cried to my uncle and I said, I wish it was that was me and not that little girl. You know, her face was gone. I hope they were able to repair it. So I understand God now. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of myself. We had to do the steps at Bridges of Hope. I started on them right away. We had to do them with somebody else in the program. That was a good thing for me. A moral inventory. I need to go back and make sure always keep doing the moral inventory. And I did step five, admitted to God and to myself and to another human being my wrongs. And step six, I'm entirely ready for him to definitely take all my shortcomings away and my character defects, but I'm still working on a lot of them. I'm a work in progress, I think. And, you know, I'll be sober January 5th for 4 years coming up, so I'm pretty excited. Humbly ask him to move our shortcomings. I've still got a lot, but I humbly ask. I humbly prayed in the bathroom before I came in here. Step 8, made a list of all the persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to all of them. You know, that it's so important. My sister said I did not make a good amend to her. And I told her how much I love Bridges of Hope, and she can see that I'm sober. I guess it's within her, but maybe I need to try again. That's being humble, right? Step 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except for when you would injure them or others. I did that. Step 10, yes, I'm going to continue to take personal inventory. And when we're wrong, promptly admit it. I'm wrong a lot, but I do promptly admit it. Step 11, thought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understand Him. I understand now that He really loves me. He only wants the best for me. And my God is a loving God, and He's not ugly to me. He wants me to have everything I want, and He's showing me that. And step 12, I'm here right now telling you all my story. And the gifts that I've gotten are amazing. I reached out the other day to a friend who I've known. She's got a lot of sobriety, about 36 years, and I've known her for about 20 years. And she's a wonderful masseuse, too. And I hadn't been to see her in a while, so I popped her a text, and I said, I really miss you. I love you. I'm so sorry. I've been so busy, but da-da-da-da-da. It wasn't 30 minutes, and she called me, and she said, hey, Cappy. Hey, and she said, I just had to pass up 2 caretaking jobs. Would you be interested? I said, how did you know I needed a job? She says, I didn't. She said, I just knew I could, you're trustworthy now, and I could, yeah, she knew I was sober. So she knew she could refer me. That's amazing to me. So, with those 2 jobs, then Michelle, my bestie, we were out shopping the other day, about 3 weeks ago, ran into another girlfriend. She's a little bit younger than me, but she has 19 years of sobriety. Some of y'all probably know her. She wanted to come tonight. And we're talking to her, and Michelle's telling her all about my new job, and she says, I got a job for you. Now I have a 3rd caretaking job. I take care of Nanny. She's 83. Guess what God's done for me? I told her, I said, I really miss my grandmother. I said, you remind me of my grandmother. And as I'm rubbing her hands and her feet, she's going, you just make me feel like I'm in heaven. I said, you just make me feel like I'm with my grandmother. I sure miss her. And she says, I'll be your grandmother. And that's my new nanny, and I just love her. I just seem to be getting blessing after blessing after blessing. And it's just amazing to me. It's amazing. All I had to do is become just a little bit willing. Just a little bit willing. Can y'all believe that I was so against doing a 12-step program? Does that amaze y'all? Does that amaze y'all? I mean, I think we all kind of have a little problem with steps, but I just was obnoxious about it. I wanted to go to a place called Passages. Y'all think I'm a little bit of a brat? I've grown up just a tad. I'm not as bratty anymore. And I believe just coming to a clubhouse and getting the love of all of you. Oh, and I also wanted to know, y'all to know that I did want nothing to do with AA. I wanted nothing. I thought that everybody in AA was freaks. And I didn't really know anything about AA. But I tell you what I found out. I found out I'm home. I found out that y'all are my friends. You're my friend. You're my friend. You're my friend. Y'all are all my friends. And I don't know, there's something about the bond about alcoholics. We take care of each other. Like my friend, she gave me a job. I got three caretaking jobs. And it's amazing. Gee, have I forgotten anything for Noah's time? Oh, my. I tell you what. They didn't take my child away again. And the thing is, I didn't lose a whole lot of respect from my daughter. My daughter's 25 today. And guess what? She loves her mama and she's proud of me. She really is. And it's a gift. I will tell y'all, I do struggle. I live with my mom. I'm blessed because she lets me live with her. But it's a challenge. But I think that my higher power keeps me the challenge to keep me on my toes, perhaps. I'm almost 60 years old, and I'm pretty blessed to have my mom still around. And I'm really blessed to have my uncle around. His brother is deceased. So I've got my family. I've got all of y'all. And I'm so glad to be here. And I want to thank Tim and Lisa for asking me to come here. I love both of you. And I want to thank my sponsor for taking her time to come here, and Grady from Quarantine and Sober. I've switched over when the pandemic came. I called Lauren real quick, my sponsor, and I said, what are we going to do? She goes, we're going to have to go to Zoom. I said, well, I just can't do that. I don't know how. I'm not electronical at all. And she said, oh, yeah, I'm going to send you. She's the most nurturing person in the world and put up with all my BS for so long. And she just treated me just with the kid gloves. And she said, I'm going to send you the link. And all you got to do is press the button. I still got that link, and that's what I do. Everybody, and now I chair on Sundays, and I give out chips, I do everything. You know, I feel a part of, and I feel like this is my country club. It's my clubhouse, you know? It's where I can come, it's my safe haven, and I know nobody will be ugly to me. Anyway, thanks y'all for letting me share this story.
Thank you so much, Pappy. That was wonderful. You had never known that was your first time ever telling your story. Cut it down so beautifully. I have asked Marin to come up and give the chips. Yay, Marin. Yay,
Marin. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a blue chip cigarette. We have a chip system to commemorate your time in sobriety. If you're just coming in, just coming back, would like to start this way of life or restart this way of life, 30 days and night, 60 days?
60 days.
60 days and night? 90 days and night?
All right. Woo-hoo!
Six months.
All right. Keep coming back.
Nine months? 1 year?
Woo-hoo!
Y'all know I'm happy. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Hey, everybody. This is the best girlfriend in the whole wide world, Michelle. And today she is celebrating 11 years. Sitting in with us at quarantine and sober, so I got her this golden medallion. Because I know her years in Michelle has been not only my best girlfriend, she's taught me what it's like to be sober and how to live. She taught me that that having a schedule is about the most important thing you can have, and that a rigorous schedule. And so she said to keep myself busy. She said you're supposed to celebrate. So her husband took us to dinner tonight before coming here to celebrate her 11 years. And she has been the best friend, and she loved me when I was drinking. She didn't have much to do with me, but she was ever so grateful when I decided to really take the plunge and really come into this program. And so I want to give you this check.
What I will say is today, 11 years ago today, I checked myself into rehab. And I thought, I'll just be there about 3 days. And once they got me in there and they checked my insurance, I was there for at least a week. And I'm like, what am I doing here? I'm not like any of these people. There were people that I had tried to commit suicide. Drug addicts, people that live on the street, and they were all in there together because they were remodeling. But they did bring in an AA meeting from outside, so the people came to visit us. And when they were talking, it was the first AA meeting I had been to like that, and when there was a woman speaking, and I felt like she's telling my story. And that was the first time I felt that I could belong somewhere and something could actually make a difference. That there were people that could understand me and I could understand what they'd been through. And it was like a light bulb went off. And now it's 11 years and I can't believe it.
Multiple thereof years. This one more time. My sponsor won't let me say anything funny.
Thank you, Maren. I appreciate that. All right. Thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
Was the last thing I wanted to do. There ain't no denying the pain you put me through. I thought I knew you so well. Guess I have to blame myself for letting you burn me till I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole in my soul. Got tired, wound up. Turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. Sweet talking heartbreaker, you had me believe that you loved me, but you gave me one match in gasoline. It all happened so fast, nothing was left but ashes. into a lie. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. From the fire.